Last week, I guess they were trying to make something out of nothing when Jim Harbaugh was talking about the former head coach of Ohio State, Urban Meyer, and yeah, very successful in his career. But he was alluding to the fact that wherever he goes, controversy surrounds him. We certainly saw that at Florida, and that also was the case at Ohio State. Let me just say, not really groundbreaking information on the part of Jim Harbaugh, but yet it certainly was trying to be made out to be something more than it was.
I think as much as anything, the timing of it probably threw a lot of folks, because it's factually pretty accurate as far as the perception of what Urban Meyer left behind in both Florida and Ohio State, like you referenced. But, it's one of those things where it's, was it necessary to say? Probably not. But was it factually accurate? Yeah, I think most folks probably agree with what Jim Harbaugh ended up saying about Urban Meyer and how he left his last couple of stops. But, where Urban's out of coaching at this point, and Jim is still in the Big Ten, obviously still in Michigan. Urban defeated him every single year. So it has that feel of perhaps there's some sour grapes involved, or where he's just trying to get that parting shot at Urban Meyer. Is it really a big controversy? No, it's Ohio State versus Michigan. They've really taken sort of gentlemanly kind of jabs at each other over the years anyway, between Michigan and Ohio State, between Michigan and Michigan State, the two main rivals for the Wolverines, whoever the coach has been. They always kind of find a way to jab at the opponent there. I spoke to Ryan Day towards the end of the week, and I was a little bit curious just to get a sense for whether or not he was going to be one to participate in that a little bit, and whether it was the assembled media, whether it was me on my radio show Big Ten this morning. He didn't take any anti-Michigan bait. He did point out, though, that he is fully entrenched in how things operate with Ohio State, where you don't say the team Michigan by name, you don't wear blue in the facility, all those different things that all the great Ohio State coaches have had to get on board with. Ryan Day is already fully entrenched with the rivalry versus Michigan.
I mean, my thing is this, and I don't know, maybe I'm just old school with regards to this. If you're Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, it'd be different if we were talking about a four-game winning streak against Ohio State. Wouldn't it help that you at least win one game against Ohio State before you keep running your mouth, even with the little jabs to the gut?
Yeah, you would think so. But, the question was posed about Urban Meyer's legacy on the podcast that he went and participated in there with the interview. And what he ended up saying afterwards, too, where folks followed up with Jim Harbaugh about it, was basically, I'm a guy who speaks my mind, and sort of I wish everyone else would speak their mind also. Some other comments that Jim Harbaugh made that had some, some folks taken aback a bit, just about, mental health in collegiate athletes, and whether or not, as we go into the transfer portal and guys are switching schools back and forth in some cases, and, utilizing when they file their appeal to try and become immediately eligible. He was making the case that apparently some athletes have used mental health and depression and issues of that sort to be a part of the claim for why they want to be immediately eligible with a new program. And he spoke out and took issue with that. And there's, some of the players who have transferred from Michigan and the family member have actually come out and sort of taken issue with that and feeling like Jim Harbaugh was directly speaking about them. He didn't name anyone by name while he was talking about it, but he's been a guy we've seen since he's been in Ann Arbor, and really even before that at Stanford and in the National Football League. It's always been fairly outspoken about things and hasn't really seemed to mind too much when folks react negatively to it.
Well, I mean, look, you were a former player. You know what it's like. Not all coaches have the player's best interest in mind when they try to destroy them mentally. Some cases, they do want to run them off. In other cases, they're just thinking about, I need to win more games to not get fired. I need to win more games to make sure I can get that next lofty contract. And so how do they get there? I'm not talking about the masses. I mean, most coaches, and you've been around them as well, most coaches actually embrace and care about the student athletes that play for them. That's not always the case. And in so many cases, with regards to if you're a player and you're throwing out the mental health aspect of it, I'm not going to disagree with them. Things that I've witnessed, and I'm sure you've witnessed it as well in your time.
And the thing is, I wouldn't even necessarily disagree with, the surface portion of what he was saying about mental health, because his main case was that people shouldn't use that as a crutch and they shouldn't make up things. They shouldn't, sort of fabricate any situation that occurred that may seem like they suffered some sort of a mental anguish while they were at a school. But that being said, again, while you have players who've transferred from your program, you have family members who've taken exception to that, then it's as much about the timing of it, the perception of it. Does it seem like you're calling a player who just left your program as though he's being, you know, factually inaccurate about it? So that's where, you know, Jim Harbaugh sort of puts himself in a bit of a tenuous position, because, you know, you may not have named anyone by name, but apparently some family members of those who just left the program feel like perhaps that was the case.
All right, so Michigan this year, since we're focused a little bit on Michigan today, and Michigan keeps on breaking the hearts of their fan base under Jim Harbaugh. And at some point, you feel like maybe he can turn the page on this. Any chances of getting upset by either Middle Tennessee or Army to begin the year?
I think Army could be a tricky one, because you know how it is when you face service academies, and especially if you happen to have players who might be looking past them. There's going to be a lot of new defensive starters for Michigan this coming season. So to face Army early in the year, and, you know, to go against the triple option and what happens with the service academy games, and the fact that it's not the season opener, so they're not going to spend several weeks or, you know, the bulk of the offseason finding moments to prepare for what they're going to see from the Black Knights. So I could see that one being a tricky one. It strikes me as a game that, you know, Army would hang in there in the first half, and then at a certain point, once you get into the second half of the game, the explosive talent that Michigan has available to them offensively would likely end up taking the game over. I do see that Army game as one that has the potential of being a tricky one for them because of that matchup. And it's going to be right before bye week. So you open with Middle Tennessee State. They're going to get their first look at that Josh Gattis offense in the regular season game and what that potentially means for, you know, how much more explosive Michigan's offense could possibly look this season. And once you get out of that, you have the Service Academy waiting on you week two, and those, especially early in the season, tend to be kind of tricky. I'm sure you've seen that more than once.
I'd like to get your thoughts, too. James Franklin brought this up, and, you know, and we've seen the trend in the SEC where for so many years, almost a decade, the West has been the dominating division in the SEC. And you know, and I just think from a logistics standpoint, it would be a nightmare if all of a sudden you're trying to every few years flip-flop teams out of the West, out of the East on a particular conference. But he was thinking and talking about the fact that, and you certainly can see that in the East right now with Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State. Those are four of your seven teams in the East where maybe it's time to maybe look at, you know, rebalancing it out where you have an equal number of tough teams in the West and along with the East. You know, your thoughts, I mean, it sounds okay. I can see where you're going there, but I'm just trying to think about it, like here in the SEC trying to pull that off, and I just don't see how they could do it.
That would be a tough one because, you know, you factor in geography with where the Big Ten East and West sit right now. It was a bit more balanced a few years ago where they had the divisional names that were panned for a while, the Leaders and Legends divisions, but those were, you know, from a matchup standpoint, a little more evenly distributed across the two divisions in the Big Ten. At this point, you know, right now the Big Ten East is certainly the dominant division between the two as far as the programs who you really view in that true championship discussion, Big Ten champions or potential college football playoff. You know, Ohio State's made it multiple times. Michigan State's made a college football playoff. Penn State won the Big Ten one year but didn't end up making the playoff because they put Ohio State in instead. And we know Michigan is normally in, you know, the top 10 to 15 of college football on an annual basis, but they haven't been able to get past Ohio State to try and make the college football playoff. You don't necessarily have that depth in the Big Ten West right now. It's a division that there's probably six out of the seven teams, I'd say, who go into the season feeling like they've got a great shot at winning the division and try to make the Big Ten championship game. Really, Illinois is probably the only one who doesn't really realistically, plausibly look at what's coming for them this season and should confidently feel like they've got a shot at winning the West. Aside from that, the other six teams are looking at it like they've got a shot, but that doesn't necessarily mean any of them are a great team. And so I think that's going to be part of the problem for the Big Ten overall as we get down the stretch of the season is whoever wins the Big Ten East, it tends to be a team that's looking at the college football playoff as a possibility who comes out of the West. The Big Ten's going to need that to be a great team, I think, this year to feel confident that they're going to have a solidified spot in the college football playoff, but like what they faced last season with Northwestern, where Ohio State goes in the Big Ten championship game, and the Wildcats have barely been ranked in the top 25 throughout the bulk of the season because they went winless in their non-conference slate and then got hot in Big Ten play and were able to end up winning the Big Ten West by three games by the end of the season and had it somehow locked up with multiple weeks to go. But that didn't enhance Ohio State's resume once they got into the Big Ten championship game.
I mean, the reality is, you pick a decade. If you pick the Big Four in the East with Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, at what point would any of the – pick any four you want out of the West, and can we match up with those four teams? I mean, it was put together based on, you know, when you look at from an historical standpoint, recent success, whatever the case may be, it never was going to be balanced.
Well, part of that depends, because there's a lot of excitement about Nebraska and what Scott Frost brings to the table. You know, Nebraska, you're looking at even the 80s, the 90s, first decade of the 2000s, they were still a perennial power. You know, they were one of the most recent. Now, they weren't in the Big Ten when they won the national championship back in the late 90s when they shared it with Michigan, but they're a Big Ten team who, aside from Ohio State, who's won a national championship in the last couple of decades here, if Nebraska can get back to prominence, they're a name brand in the Big Ten West that means something. Wisconsin has become a name brand in the Big Ten in college football that means something, that has championship sort of pedigree to them. Once you get past that, then maybe you're talking Iowa as sort of the next team on the next rung. I don't think nationally as a name brand, as a championship contender, my old alma mater is right there on that level. But I wouldn't necessarily stack those programs on the same level as Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State historically. But Nebraska, Wisconsin, Iowa, those are three brands, three teams that can compete at that level. They're just not there on an annual basis, especially Nebraska right now.
You know, I'm looking at the ACC, and you know, we talk about Big Ten and issues there, Pac-12, et cetera. The ACC has a problem because you've got one great team and nothing close to being in that conversation. That was the case last year. I think it continues this year. And you can make the argument that even the Hurricanes of Miami at the end of 2017 was puffed up a little bit as well. You know, that's a problem, and I'm really surprised that we find the ACC ever in this position, if you know what I mean. Look, we know we talk about in, you know, over the last 5 years, a league that, you know, you got enough teams that are bowl eligible, they get to their sixth win, a lot of 6-6, 7-5 or whatever. But if Florida State is down in the ACC, and we haven't seen a consistency out of the Hurricanes of Miami, the ACC has issues with regards to somebody pushing Clemson during the course of the season.
I would agree. Going back to the brand aspect of it, if Willie Taggart can get Florida State right, that there shouldn't be, or he proved himself to be a quality recruiter prior to last season, having a full cycle under his belt, there's potential Willie Taggart could get Florida State right. Syracuse has become competitive. Miami, we know what Manny Diaz has got rolling there, especially what they've been able to do in the transfer portal and the talent that they've added into the program. Now it's going to have to be about tangible results on the field. You know, it's one thing to add the talent and have an influx there. There's plenty of talent there in Florida. They brought some from other programs as well. But that being said, now it's about winning games on the field, and that's what we need to see Manny Diaz able to prove as a head coach. So there's programs who have a history that you would think they can be comparable to Clemson, but right now Clemson and Alabama are so far beyond the other programs. I mean, if Alabama wasn't the Tide, you could almost make the case that within the SEC, Alabama would have a similar problem to what Clemson faces in the ACC, because if Florida State ends up being a great team this year, I think they're going to be highly ranked, and people are going to view it as a quality win, you know, at whatever point if Clemson beats them. Same thing with what we've seen in recent years from Miami, from even Syracuse. You know, they nearly beat Clemson last season. So, I mean, there's teams that are going to have enough respect with their winning games. They're going to be highly rated and increase the resume of Clemson. It's just about whether or not we can count on those teams to emerge from the ACC this year. Whereas with Alabama, even though there's really not, you know, we can expect that LSU will probably do more offensively and be more consistent if Joe Burrow stays healthy. But from one year to the next, who knows that for sure. Right now, the main other program that seems like on an annual basis they really truly are in that conversation of being a great team right now is Georgia. And so it seems the Tide and the Bulldogs are going to be on a collision course in the SEC championship game. But, you know, aside from just being able to bully some opponents around here and there, there's really not, I would say, a depth in the SEC that goes far beyond what we see in the ACC this season just going into the year. Now, if we do get more offensive prowess from some of these teams, like in LSU, if Jimbo really gets Texas A&M going against a really tough schedule this season, there's potential for those. There's not a lot of proven commodities in the Southeastern Conference right now either.
Well, and before we let you go, we could almost bring the same conversation up about the Big 12. We know Oklahoma should be in the hunt again. I like the fact that Jalen Hurts transferred there. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to improve the passing aspect of his game at quarterback. If Texas doesn't live up to their expectations, it may be Oklahoma and everybody else as far as the Big 12 this year as well.
Yeah, some of the conference commissioners have been talking about the aspect of what's a good season, what's a great season, what's satisfactory. We've heard a similar refrain from commissioners from the ACC, the Big 12, the Big 10, about the fact that if you don't make the college football playoffs, then the perception of your fan base has turned into such that it's like you had a bad year. In the Big 12, Oklahoma has separated itself from the fact, just like Ohio State has separated itself from the Big 10, Alabama separated itself in the SEC, and Clemson in the ACC. So Oklahoma is your bell cow in the Big 12, but to enhance their resume, it'll suit them if there's another team who's viewed in that championship discussion as another great team. It potentially could be Texas. And that's part of my expectation this year. I actually picked Texas last season to win the Big 12. They fell a game short of that. They were the second-best team in the Big 12, couldn't take down Oklahoma when necessary. But I think there's a great chance of that this year. Sam Ellinger keeps his mind right and continues to, be more consistent with his acumen as a passer. There's no reason to think Texas shouldn't be in that discussion. But if they're not, then who's really the other pick to click? I mean, Iowa State folks should be excited about what Matt Campbell's building there. Are they really going to win the Big 12? Are they really a team who's got a shot at making the college football playoff? I don't need the Cyclones in that discussion yet, especially factoring in what they lost in the backfield last year with running back David Montgomery. So there's some other teams who should be competitive, but I don't know if there's maybe one other championship-level program that's in the Big 12 this season as we're just looking at it going into the year. So that's the thing. Are you going to have the opponents within your conference who can enhance your resume to the extent that you're going to need to solidify a college football playoff spot?